Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast. It is the PODcast. It's what we do every week here for prideofdetroit.com, the SB Nation blog, for everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions, news, fan stuff, everything else. I'm really tired, so I'm kind of going all over the place doing my regular intro. Jeremy is also very tired here. Jeremy Reisman is here.
Yeah, we won. We fucking won.
You like that?
You
do like it. Oh, you're coming in a little fuzzy now, but he's all right. He's here. That's Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader at Detroit Online on Twitter. I'm Chris Lemieux, editor for Pride of Detroit on Twitter at Detroit Southern. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD. And Alex Reno at Alex_Reno. Ryan, hello.
What's going on? We won. We won the goddamn football game. That's
Alex
all that
Reno,
matters.
Hello.
Yep, I'm here with a new and working microphone.
It's a wonderful microphone. I love it. You're making this audiophile happy. We won, guys. We won the damn
we
football game.
We fucking did it.
We did it.
Wasn't pretty, but we did
game.
It.
It was glorious. Glorious! All right, we talk about it in more ways than not. Let's talk about the most pressing issue of the night, though. Calvin Johnson on Dancing with the Stars. Ryan, you are watching this. Please give us everything we need to. We need to break this down for 3 hours. So I hope you're ready.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk. We're not even going to talk about the game. I mean, I guess we'll do an ancillary podcast for that content if you're looking for that.
Like a mini pod.
Yeah, we'll do a 3 hour podcast right now on Calvin Johnson's like 45-second cha-cha routine he did.
People are calling him Cha-Cha-Tron now, and I want to kill myself about that.
The best thing is when the judge called him Cha-Cha-Tron, it was dead silent. There was no applause. Nobody laughed.
Who said that?
His name was Bruno. Of course a guy named Bruno is going to come up with a nickname like Cha-Cha-Tron, but apparently, you know, everybody said that Calvin Johnson had zero rhythm. All of the judges talked about how he has rhythm. He just lacks control.
Yeah, my mother said that he looked really good.
Yeah, he scored a 26 out of 40.
This is already too much. I thought we were being ironic about talking about this.
They did not say that Calvin Johnson did not have control, did they?
I swear to God. They said one judge said that he has rhythm, he just lacks control.
Oh, fuck off.
Was it Mike Pereira? Was he the judge?
Why are we talking about this still?
Okay, next.
I did not intend to get into this bucket of worms.
I did not intend to write a piece on this, but I watched it, and now I can't wait for next week.
Oh, no.
That's going to be our top hit. Like, you know, you're going to supplant Get the Fuck Out.
That's all I am. That's all I'm about, is giving the people what they want.
Got to give the people. All right. No, for real. Sunday. Lions go into Lucas Oil Stadium where there is no oil and there's no Lucas. And they get the win. It doesn't look pretty near the end. It looks pretty cool early on. And we're going to talk about what happened later on. But let's start at the very beginning, shall we?
Yeah, let's start about how that game started and how it was eerily familiar to last year's
sequel. Oh, you said
and I said it. I kept saying it, and it was happening. And then,
like everyone else on Twitter was pointing out the exact score of the San Diego game from last year.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically an SOL argument. I was so disappointed in you, Alex.
I was just joking, though. I wasn't serious.
Okay, well, it was joking, and it was funny for like 30 seconds, and then I wanted to put my hands around your throat.
And then you joined in the second half, don't even lie.
I joined in, ironically, because I was fucking furious, Alex. I wanted to put my hands around your throat until I heard your last breath.
To be fair,
I stopped after the first half, okay?
It's funny that everyone compares it to that San Diego game, because to me it actually reminds me more of the Dallas playoff game, because out of nowhere the offense just exploded and they took a big lead into halftime there, and then this felt like a minor redemption story of that, because even though, like in the Dallas game, we allowed the Colts to come back there at the end, we got a chance at redemption and did it. And it felt pretty good.
The reason why I thought it was the San Diego game was, like, you already saw the start of the comeback, because there was that touchdown by Andrew Luck right before the half. And that the Phillip Rivers is the same thing in the San Diego game.
Sort of. Well, they were.
No, didn't he throw? He threw the pick to Slay in the end zone.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay.
They were like the second quarter of that game, the Chargers were consistently driving against the Lions. I don't think they put up many points until the second half, though.
Yeah, Keenan Allen was ripping us to shreds in that game, if I remember correctly.
I think too much of that game.
Poor choice of words with Keenan Allen and shredding.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Ooh, I didn't even realize what I was saying.
Rough day for a lot of guys out there. I know RG3 is already going on the bend here, too, to have to come back. And who else was getting shut down for a little while? I forget. But
there were some murmurs about Sammy Watkins getting shut down, but take Ian Rappaport's word or not, apparently it's a pain management thing that he'll have to work through over the season.
So doesn't look like the Lions have too many injuries coming out of that game, so that's good. But where do we want to start in this game? We're kind of like figuring out a place to, like, we've got like a big sandwich in front of us, and we're trying to find out where to take the first bite.
Because start with either Stafford or the running game.
Okay, so you want to start with the good stuff that's on the sandwich. You want to start with like the meat and cheese. You don't want to start with like horseradish that someone accidentally put in here.
Horsey sauce on a roast beef from Arby's, not bad.
Oh God. Come on, Alex. Pull it together.
Do better.
Horseradish is
do
bad.
Better.
No, I'm saying the bad part of the sandwich is, like, if you got it in one of those styrofoam boxes and it's nestled up next to a pickle and, like, half of the sandwich is soaked with that pickle juice on it.
Oh, yeah. Or gross. If it's, like, it's supposed to be a hot sandwich, but it hasn't been heated all the way through, so there's, like, a bite that's just, like, really cold.
Yeah, that's the second half.
Yeah, so let's talk about the first, though. Let's talk about this offense. Because I think, you know, it was a victory. It's a celebration. We should start on a positive note. Let's talk about that offense. Theo Riddick getting his career-long 21-yard rushing attempt, which we saw Theo Riddick rushing in the preseason.
He did not look very good. And I would say that he might have had, like, four of his best runs of his entire career in that one game.
Yes. And that's including probably his time at Notre Dame, too. Like,
it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Like, the offense as a whole, to me, was kind of an enigma, and I pointed this out in the Slack room during the game. This offense was the definition of boom or bust the entire game. It either went three and out or it scored a touchdown throughout the entire game until that last field goal drive.
Right.
That is bizarre. That is completely bizarre. Like, I don't know what to make of that at all.
I think that's something they'll probably have to work on. But yeah, no, I just that's. That was, like, you know, I didn't get to see most of this game. I kind of watched a lot of it on replay and a lot of the highlights. And, yeah, a lot of that just kind of stuck out. Just a very inconsistent offense right now. I feel like, you know, they're still trying to learn out parts of the system. And, you know, I'm not going to try to stereotype this as being part of a hurry-up, no-huddle offense or whatever. But, yeah, it just there was no possession where it's like it doesn't end in a score. But you're still getting, you know, you're still burning time of possession because you're just holding on to the ball because you're able to convert on third down.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest point that I think probably should be made is just how well Matthew Stafford is excelling under this kind of quick pass offense, because he has been unbelievable since Cooter took over.
31 out of 39 for what, 340 yards passing?
Yeah, he was great, unless you ask Pro Football Focus.
I don't need to ask Pro Football Focus. I think it was Football Perspective pointing out his any ANY over A. I forget. It's like adjusted net yards per attempt or so was like second for all quarterbacks on Sunday behind Drew Brees. The only problem was is that number three was Andrew Luck.
I mean, both of them had an incredible performance.
Yeah. No, and...
But, I mean...
Still,
this,
like...
This has been a long time
coming. You're only missing eight attempts in that entire game. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And you threw 40, so that's pretty amazing. But like I said, this is something that's a long time coming. I put out a stat today on Twitter. Since the bye week last year, Matthew Stafford is completing 71.1% of his passes, averaging just about 280 yards a game. 22 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Yeah, I think that's what I'd want out of a quarterback. You just, you know, a very high completion percentage, because completion percentage almost directly translates to efficiency.
Yeah, and especially if you're keeping those yards per attempt up, and he was, what, 8.7 or something last?
Yeah, yeah.
Last night?
I think the DVOA numbers are probably going to come around, like, Tuesday or Wednesday from Football Outsiders. I'm going to be really interested to check those out for Matt Stafford to see, like, because that's kind of where I go for, like, a really good breakdown of efficiency. But, like, everything I saw looking at his highlights, he just looked incredibly efficient. Like, he just knew where that ball was supposed to go.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think you might see a little bit lower numbers than you're expecting on Football Outsiders just because of that weird third down anomaly where, you know, they went 3 and out so many times, four or five times throughout the game. But
yeah. What was with those like screens on third and long? That was kind of bizarre.
Yeah, I don't think, but a lot of that was, yeah, I don't know.
That is something that, I don't know, like, this is a kind of offense that can't get in third and longs, and they did a couple times, and each time they did, it seemed like they kind of drew up one of these plays that relied on everyone hitting their downfield blocks, and that didn't happen a lot.
I was just thinking that bubble screen you're talking about, though, Alex, that's a very common, like, college thing. Like, a lot of teams run bubble screens on, like, third down, and it's like...
Yeah, but, I mean,
it's the new draw
third and nine, we ran that twice, so it was...
Yeah, I know, it's the new draw play. It's like coaches run this for whatever reason, and you're screaming because you don't know why they've drawn it up. Ryan, you had something you wanted to get to, though.
That stat you brought up, the average net yards per attempt,
yeah,
of Stafford, it's a great stat. That's a great stat. Something that football or that, you know, PFF Pro Football Focus knocked Stafford on was his completion percentage on balls that traveled further than 10 yards. And the thing that I don't understand how PFF can criticize a quarterback for running his offense, because clearly the days of a Calvin Johnson, a deep threat where Matthew Stafford is going to have to throw the ball, you know, far, you know, further down the field than maybe, you know, he should at times. Those days might be past. It might be an offense where it's, you know, complete passes in the short game, and then let your receivers, let your running backs pick up yards after the catch, because that's the kind of talent that's on the team. You have Ameer Abdullah, you have Theo Riddick, you have Golden Tate, you have these guys, even Anquan Boldin. I mean, if his first catch doesn't get called back for that ticky-tack, you know, holding call on Tate, I mean, you have receivers who are going to catch the ball close to the line of scrimmage or just a few yards removed from it, and they're gonna get first downs with their feet. They're going to get 15, 20 yards sometimes, and I just can't understand how Stafford grades out so low on Pro Football Focus, because he had such an incredible game, I thought. He was in complete control of his offense.
Well, yeah, and I take huge umbrage with Pro Football Focus even having numbers out as early as they do. Like, they're not seeing what Stafford sees without looking at the all 22. I just don't put anything into anything other than maybe line play and running back play, because that's all you can really see in the broadcast view. So I don't know. I thought Stafford looked great. I thought he was going through his reads really, really well. I saw him being patient, not just like forcing something into his first or second reads. And, you know, I just saw an offense where he looked like he was in control.
Can I ask, like, because I don't read Pro Football Focus for a lot of stuff, like, are they saying these same things about Alex Smith, who we've known for years, does the same kind of offense? He doesn't throw the ball down the field that far? Do they say the same thing about him? Do they criticize him about that? I'm legitimately curious. I'm not saying...
Well, I mean, this is a website that gave Aaron Rodgers a negative grade after... I can't remember the stats off of the top of my head, but I thought he threw like 4 or 5 touchdowns in that game. I mean...
The first time I heard about Pro Football Focus was listening to the Dan Le Batard show. They called them up because they rated like Ryan Tannehill the best quarterback after like 2 weeks in 2014 or something. So, like, yeah, like there are just complete anomalies out there. But I think you're right about that, about not having that deep threat anymore. I think that's probably the one really big takeaway about not having Calvin Johnson anymore, is you're just not going to bark off a 40, 50 yard play with regularity like you used to.
I think the 40 and 50 yard plays are going to come in a different form. I think that they're entirely
after the catch. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all going to come, you know, like in the those short yard throws. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's not just going to like throw the dragon deep out there and and like someone's going to just leap up into the air and make that spectacular play in double coverage or whatever.
And for people that are going to be, you know, for people that are going to be aching for that, for people who are going to be moaning and complaining about why he's not doing that, because the personnel does not dictate those kind of plays getting called.
And to be honest, like what I mean, those are really cool plays. Those goes on highlight reels. But I would rather my team make, you know, first downs repeatedly and make sure like they are playing efficient football and scoring. I think the failure to convert that sometimes on third downs is a little more frustrating to me than not having a deep threat.
Yeah, like when Ameer Abdullah and Theo Riddick are like sending linebackers to the hospital every play, like what do you want them to do when like their running back is right in front of you wide open with nobody even close to you? Like,
well, and admittedly, I mean, I still have to go back and I have to watch, you know, the all 22, or, you know, even I have to watch the game at least a second time. It's so, you know, people who want these initial reactions, I mean, this thirst for, you know, instant feedback is kind of what makes, you know, these grades so, just like Jeremy said, I mean, they're just like, you can't buy into them. You can't believe them, because how can you see everything that's going on in the field? But, you know, I have to go back and see like these drives that went 3 and out, like how Jeremy pointed out earlier. Why was it so night and day? Why was the first half everything was clicking on offense, and then, you know, to start the second half, it was just so flat? And why weren't we getting these first downs?
All right, so that's one side of the ball that we talked enough about here. Let's go to the other side. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to need to talk about the defense. Because as they like to say on the internet, a lot going on there. Okay, we're back here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Pride of Detroit, by the way. And make sure to check us out on Facebook Live. Search for Pride of Detroit on Facebook, where you can see my mug and Ryan's mug and Jeremy's mug as we continue to do these Facebook Lives. Ryan, you had an amazing Facebook Live on Sunday.
It was a lot of fun.
A lot of people tuning in. Yeah, it was great fun from what I heard.
I had a great time. I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, we're going to be doing those all throughout the season after every game, so make sure to tune in for those.
Next one on Tuesday, right? Are you doing that fantasy Facebook
yeah.
Live?
Oh yeah, let me plug my shiz. Every Tuesday night you can come get some fantasy advice from yours truly at Ryan_POD.
Are we
so doing, if you're listening to this when it comes out, tonight.
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 Come on, Sal. The Tigers are playing tonight.
Yes. Are we going to do the fantasy podcast again sometime, Ryan? That was fun.
Yeah. I mean, we should do that.
Yeah, I'm pretty busy, but we'll try to make it work. But let's talk about what wasn't working much, which was, this is kind of the problem of me, like, this was the problem of me not being able to watch it in real time and thus only watching bits and pieces of it. Like, I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on with the offense, because, like, at first, it looked like, okay, they're just getting hungry. They're eating out there. Kerry Hyder is eating.
I'm talking about defense. The defense, right?
Defense. Did I say the wrong thing again?
You said offense.
Jesus Christ.
But go ahead.
I'm just as tired as Jeremy, apparently. The defense. Like, how did the defense just completely give up on, like, all these points before the second half even began?
I want to know how Kerry Hyder looked on the plays that he wasn't getting those two sacks. Like, I know he had a great game, but I'm wondering if he even got any push on the other plays, because, like, our pass rush was completely non-existent other than those two sacks.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And I don't really know what to make of the difference between the first and second half. I know some of it, I think I attribute it to the Colts just kind of giving up on the running game, because I thought the Lions actually did a pretty good job defending the run, especially in the first half. I think their passing game in the second half maybe opened up their running game a little bit, but they still didn't run the ball that well. So I think the Colts just kind of got wise to it, and, you know, they're also down 21-3 at one point. Why run the ball too much anyways? But the Lions just had no answer for Luck the entire game. And I think once the Colts realized that and were able to just kind of put the running game aside, it was hard to stop them.
And you know, Mike Payton did have the article that talked about there are a lot of similarities between the numbers that Matthew Stafford posted in his first however many games, that, you know, Andrew Luck had similar numbers through however many first games. But even with that being said, they're both great quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's still Andrew Luck on the other side. And I think there is something to the run game being abandoned.
I totally agree. I mean, Frank Gore was on the sidelines at certain points when, you know, in the second half, Frank Gore was nowhere to be seen. And I think that they finally wised up, and Chuck Pagano talks about how the Colts offense are slow starters. Maybe it's just because he tries to, like, force this run game that doesn't exist. And when he's doing that, his offense is going to stall out, because Frank Gore is not the running back that he used to be. And it's clearly going to be a struggle for the Colts this season. And if the Colts want to have any kind of semblance of success on offense this year, they're going to have to do everything through Andrew Luck.
Well, I mean, I want to talk about less from the angle of the Colts and more about from the angle now of the Lions, because, like,
even though the Lions defense looked bad, at the end of the day, this is a quarterback league. And when you have a really good quarterback on the other side of the ball, and he gets time like he did. I mean, if you want a Job segue into this, the defensive line was not getting any push in the second half whatsoever. And when you give Andrew Luck time to, you know, secondary can only do so well. They can only cover guys for so long until guys get open. So
I want to touch on the secondary, but I want to get to the defensive line first, because I think that to me was kind of the main failing of the defense on Sunday. It's not that, you know, Andrew Luck just torched the backfield for however many yards he did, because that's going to happen when you're Andrew Luck, when you're up against Andrew Luck. But it's just that this defensive line, which we all thought was incredibly strong, was not getting penetration on what we believe to be a beat up offensive line for the Colts.
Yeah. And it all kind of works together, though, because the Lions, I think, especially in the second half, really tried to just get that pressure from their front four, and it obviously wasn't working, so Luck was shredding them. So they were also sending blitz pretty often, I felt like, and a lot of times those blitzes were getting there. I saw, you know, a fair amount of linebackers getting there, maybe even a safety blitzer here or two. And they were getting there, but Luck is a good enough quarterback where he can spot that mismatch, that one-on-one matchup, or, you know, the free guy real quick, and he did, and the Lions paid for it, like, whether they tried to send a blitz or not. And it all does kind of go back to the defense form, but they certainly didn't 90% of that game.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I guess I'm not worried too much about the defense. I think defense will pick it up, but it's just kind of like, I feel like there's going to be tougher lines to face than what the Colts gave you on Sunday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, that's not supposed to be a great offensive line. Their star guy ended up playing Jack Muhor, but you have to imagine he probably wasn't 100%. Their left tackle isn't considered very good, but Ziggy Ansah's a factor at all this game.
Yeah, Ziggy Ansah was very clear here. Yeah.
There's definitely a concern on that defensive line at this point. Because that's not really a thing. That's just like, you know, the line's got a lot of defensive linemen on the 53 roster, so you're expecting that to be very deep.
And I think the only other thing that really stood out as a big deficiency was the red zone defense. I was kind of taken aback a little bit by the fact that Jack Doyle, of all people, caught 2 touchdown passes. That seems a bit problematic when there are some question marks about the depth along the linebacker position. But when it comes to your starters, you would have thought that, you know, DeAndre Levy would have fixed a lot of these like coverage problems, especially in the red zone, or even, you know, Tyre Whitehead. But people want to make a big stink about how he had 10 tackles and, you know, 2 passes broken up. But there wasn't a more inconsistent player on defense than I think Tyre all day.
Oh, he was terrible. I thought, yeah.
I don't know if I'd call his play altogether terrible, but I would say that he was a mixed bag. Like every drive, you didn't know what you were going to get out of your middle linebacker.
I mean, he had some good drives, but he was almost single-handedly at fault for one of their touchdown drives. Like unless we can't be sure whether one of the coverage mishaps was completely on him, but it sure looked like he picked the wrong receiver and he gave up a touchdown along with another catch that he gave up on that drive.
All right, so we've been going this long, not to keep going on the defense, but I know we've got to get charged up about the ending a little bit. Jeremy, do you want to talk about this?
Do you want me to? I could go for another 45 minutes if you want.
Do you want me to give you your own segment here in a little bit? Is that what you're saying?
I don't care. All right, look, I want to talk at least a little bit about the time management.
I'll give you like 5 minutes here. Like, cause I know this has been a big deal for you. Before we begin, Ryan, I know you had a rant on you wanted to do on Kerry Hyder. Did you already get to your point on him? Did I miss that?
Oh, no, you did not. And thank you for reminding me. For all of you people out there in Lions land who are interested in having a third quarterback on this football team, one that wouldn't have been even on the field, A, or B, even dressed yesterday, 2 days ago when you finally hear this podcast that Chris Lemieux so wonderfully edits and puts together.
Yep.
There would not have been a single iota of impact that Jake Rudock would have had on that football game. But you know who did? Kerry Hyder. You know who was a guy who was on the roster bubble? Kerry Hyder. That dude had 2 sacks and was getting pressure when the Lions defensive line was getting pressure like no other player on the team. So say what you want. Say that Kerry Hyder wouldn't say that Kerry Hyder was a lock behind closed doors. Well, then you don't have the guy that you guys are all clamoring about, Antoine Williams, who made the goddamn football team, to be the guy that you want to take over for Tyre Whitehead. Okay. So my point is, be happy that Jake Rudock isn't on this team because, oh yeah, Matthew Stafford, signed, sealed, delivered, had the best game of any quarterback yesterday. Yeah, Drew Brees. I don't care. Bleep that. But you can write that. Like, I am Jalen Rams. You can write that.
All right, now we've got 5 minutes here for rant number 2, Jeremy, to talk about the clocks. This is kind of the rant mini-segment.
All right, well,
next week I should just give, like, a whole segment.
Yeah, we should do a rant segment.
We should do a rant segment, and we really need Ryan.
This is Kangaroo Court.
It really is. And hold on, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna make imaging for that. Yeah.
I did not mean to say that about Drew Brees. He's a nice guy. And like it's
Drew
great.
Brees is great.
He had a great game. It's just that Matthew Stafford's was better.
We also need you to bring back Wally's World. We need to do what we've been talking about for Wally's World.
I have a Wally's World for you later.
Okay, where is actually, Wally? Yeah, good, because I've got did imaging you see him? For it. We'll do the Wally's World next before the mailbag, but first epic rant number 2, Jeremy, get in here.
All right, well, before I get into what my argument is, let me tell you what it isn't. My argument isn't that Caldwell is
disproportionately bad at time management, because I think every NFL coach is bad at time management.
This is always the thing with Caldwell, is everyone's like, he sucks. And it's like, I think that's just the case of every NFL coach is just stupid in the head. The last smart coaches in my mind in this league were like Bill Walsh and Jimmy Johnson, and everyone else has just been a fucking dullard.
Right. And there's this culture of, I don't know if it's fear of change or if it's a resistance towards, you know, probabilities that show clear advantages for certain strategies or what it is. But all these coaches do this, and it's really weird because Chuck Pagano, he had the biggest blunder of anyone on Sunday.
He gave us the timeout.
He gave us a timeout, and then all right, let's just back up for a second. Let's set the stage.
Sure.
It's a 2-minute warning. The Colts are second and something from the Lions 21-yard line. Colts have 2 timeouts. Lions have 3. The Colts pick up a first down. They get down to, the 12-yard line. They let the clock run down to about 1:15. The Lions there could have used a timeout if they wanted to. Kept about 1:50 on the clock. You know, save about 35 seconds, let's say. They decide not to. So the clock runs down, the Colts run another play, then immediately call a timeout for whatever reason. I have no idea why.
Can I actually quote him real quick?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, so he said, looking back on it, could we have burned more time off the clock? Yeah, but we had some personnel issues. We wanted to get a different personnel group in there, whatever it was, and I decided to call a timeout there. Whatever it was? Like, he doesn't even remember why he called the timeout.
Yeah, and hold on. If you're that concerned about your personnel, guess what? You can still use that timeout, but I don't know, maybe let 20 seconds run off the clock first. Maybe let 30 seconds run off the clock first. I mean, time is not an issue for the Colts at this point. At all, right?
Yeah.
Can we all agree with that?
It's not
they're
like
the 12-yard line, and they have a 1:15. That is...
It's not like the refs at every point were, like, just letting them get burned because they couldn't substitute players or whatever. Ed Hockley, like, when the Lions were trying to go up-tempo, Ed Hockley and his guys were, like, standing over the ball, not allowing the Lions to snap. So, like, it's not like, you know, you weren't getting help from the league in... I'm not saying this in a conspiratorial manner. I think, though, like, overall, the NFL has, like, a resistance to letting, you know, the impact of the hurry up, which is basically to fuck up anyone who wants to do defensive substitutions. Like, they're trying to prevent that from happening.
Right.
But go on. You're still on a roll here, so...
So, yeah. So, okay. So, the Lions could have saved themselves 35 seconds on first down. The Colts saved them another 20, 30 seconds by calling a timeout of their own. Then the play right before the touchdown, it gets reviewed. So the clock stops about 15 seconds into the play clock while they go to review it. The Colts come out after the review, call stands, immediately get to the line, run the play, score a touchdown. So the Colts... the Lions could have initially called a timeout before that review to save 15, 20 seconds, and then the Colts screwed up by immediately running a play instead of running another 20, 30 seconds. So we have 35 seconds that the Lions could have stopped originally, another 20 to 30 that the Colts saved them, and then the Lions could have saved themselves at least 20 seconds, and then the Colts saved the Lions 20 seconds. So we're talking about almost a full 2 minutes out of the 2-minute warning that that either the Colts gave to the Lions or the Lions failed to save themselves. So what I'm basically saying is if the Colts wanted to, and they absolutely should have, they could have run out the clock completely because the Lions were holding those timeouts in their pocket. Now, I listened to Caldwell's explanation. He said the team drills for 30 seconds with 3 timeouts or 2 or 1 timeout. They drill, like, they have a specific drill for that. And I understand that. You do want to be prepared for something like that. But this is an opportunity where the Lions could have had at least 1:20 with probably 1 timeout. Obviously, things change depending on how the Lions play this out. But tell me that you would rather have 37 seconds with 3 timeouts over 1:30 and 1 timeout? Are you fucking kidding me? That doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry, like, I only gave you 5 minutes for this.
I get that we can't predict exactly how things are going to play out. But when your defense is giving up touchdowns every single drive, and you see the Colts in the red zone with 2 minutes left and clock running off and no one's doing anything about it, and you have three timeouts, you got to realize you need as much time as possible. And people like to point out that the Lions used all three timeouts. They needed them on that final drive. But, you know, and that gave them the opportunity to use all of the field. But guess what? If you have a minute 30, that is plenty of time to get in field goal range, even if you don't have any timeouts. And you can throw it wherever the hell you want. Because guess what? You spike the ball, that burns maybe 15 seconds off. You save 15 seconds with a timeout. So, you know, those two extra timeouts that you had instead of the one that you would have had if you used them correctly, that saves you 30 seconds. So 37 seconds plus 30 seconds that you saved, now you're at a minute 7 instead of the minute 20, minute 30. You misplayed it. That's math. That's science. Caldwell screwed up, but guess what? We won, so I guess it doesn't matter.
I don't.
Yep, that's my problem right there, is everybody that's going like so quick to defend Caldwell, their argument is basically, who cares? We won.
If this was reversed, the result reversed, everyone would be all over Caldwell's ass.
But, and that's exactly how everybody's taking it over at Stanford. The Colts law, right. Like, they're shitting all over Pagano for that timeout.
That's how it works across the entire NFL. We always love to Monday morning quarterback this shit. And it's only if your team takes the L. And again, not saying fire Caldwell or anything stupid like that, but like, yeah, there. I mean, it's a logical critique, I think.
It's important to point these things out because they're going to bite him in the ass, and they have in the past. And I know people have seen, you know, he got away with it in the the Atlanta game England.
Yes, I remember that game. Yeah, yeah.
He escapes these things every now and then, and yeah, that's going to happen. I'm talking about win probability. I'm not talking about, you know, it's never, even if you do it the quote unquote right way, it's not going to work out every time. And even if you do it the wrong way every time, you know, sometimes it works out.
Well, but I think every coach has these problems too. But yeah,
they do. They do. And you know, I'm happy that the Lions won. I'm not going to be a stick in the mud about this sort of thing. I didn't even write a separate article about this. It in, you know, my report card thing. It's just something that the reason it frustrates me so much is that it seems so very simple to me. It's just a very easy concept to use your timeouts on defense because it saves you more time then. And so few coaches do it correctly. I just don't get it. The Lions hired Randy Edsall this year to kind of manage that sort of thing. And
Randy Edsall is a good coach.
Well, I don't
know. Randy Edsall is not a good coach. Dude, no. He's not a good coach, and I will not hear arguments this matter. I think the NFL just needs to implement a position in every organization that allows for, like, an extra guy to, like, manage the time or something. But we're already at, like, 8 minutes or something for, like, the 5 minutes I gave you. So
my bad.
No, it's fine, man. Next week we're going to have this as its own segment. I should call this, like, Rage Corner or something. But next segment, we're going to get to our brand new segment, finally unveiling it, Wally's World. And then we'll start into the mailbag. So we'll come right back after this break.
Wally, did you see him? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally?
That new sound you heard means we are now in Wally's world. This is, Ryan, how do we explain this segment to people who might not be familiar with us?
My father is a good-natured man.
He's a sweet man. I've met him before. He's a very sweet man.
Yeah, he's good-natured. He enjoys sports more than the next guy. He's hardworking. I don't know anybody who is as hard of a worker as my father.
He's Detroit even though, through.
Yeah, I mean, I works for General Motors. He's Detroit through and through. Chris is right. Sometimes what? Sometimes. Thank you, Chris. Sometimes my father's sports opinions, they come from the wrong corners of the media.
He listens to a lot of 97.1.
And up until Skip Bayless left for Fox, he watched an awful lot of First Take. And mind you, he watched First Take before it was First Take. He watched it when it was Cold Pizza, when it was, who writes for Denver? Woody Page.
Woody Page? Oh, wow.
When it was Woody Page and Skip Bayless discussing their latest hot takes. Okay, so my dad has been on the hot take gravy train for quite some time.
Is he switching over to FS1 anytime soon?
I thought I saw it recorded in the DVR. I cannot confirm.
No.
Did he really like record First Take and everything?
My dad recorded First Take every morning and would watch it when he woke up.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
So this is where we're coming at from here. Just sometimes Wally has just he has this moment where he will just randomly come in and you will just be floored by what he says about a certain player.
Yes. Yes, that will happen from time to time. And when it happens, because my dad has such a at least informed opinion about sports, sometimes when he comes to me with these hot takes and actually believes in them or gives them credibility, I am shocked. And sometimes I look at him sideways.
I think the problem is almost too much credulity. Like, you know, it's just not an ability to suss out this opinion is just horseshit.
Yes, I would agree sometimes. Yes, that can be the case.
But it's not an opinion this week. It's something else.
No, it is not. Because my father had to work on Sunday, because like I said, hardest working dude I've ever met in my entire life. My dad was through the roof that the ESPN fantasy football app was down from approximately 1 o'clock until 5:30.
He was not alone, by the way. Like this is a big thing on social media.
He was not alone, but when he calls me a half an hour into his shift and says, "Ryan, I brought my tablet to work and this goddamn fantasy app still isn't working." I said, "Dad, you're at work." He said, "I know, but I brought my tablet and I want to keep up on my team." And I said, "Dad, I don't know when it's going to be back up. The servers are probably just overrun. They just rolled out this new fantasy app this year. They're probably working through bugs." My dad says, "Well, this is just great." And hangs up the phone.
And hangs up on you.
So he's calling you like your tech support or something. This is the other thing about Wally, too. It's just like for some reason, he just comes to you with all these problems.
I know. And because maybe he thinks I'm the only person that he can talk to about them, assuming.
Maybe.
And that might be the case. And I totally get it. He's not part of the technology age. I mean, this isn't a guy who's, well versed in putting in a Wi-Fi password. Okay. I mean, it was a struggle enough to get him to, switch over from his Andrew Luck flip phone to a smartphone. But I mean, the veracity in which he called me yesterday, the words he was using, the forcefulness in his voice,
my dad, because
at one point I wanted to snap back at him when he goes, "Well, I don't know how are all my players playing? I don't know how they're dad." Look at the box scores. Like, if you want me to give you the calculations at how you get your score, you can do the math. He was just not having any of it. He wants the app. The app has made life far too easy for Walt. He cannot go back. He has had bread without the crust. He cannot go back.
He's had stuffed crust.
Oh, fuck that.
And mailbag.
With that being said, that's Wally's world. Alex, I think you need to bring in the mailbag.
We do. We do need to bring in the mailbag. We should probably note that Jeremy has dropped out. He got so mad about clock management, he like took off all his clothes and he was red, mad, and nude online he was so mad. He just had to storm off. He also heard that we were going to talk about something vaguely fantasy football. So that might have played a part of it too.
I think he went out and started waving his dick in traffic.
All right. Alex, take us to the mailbag.
I love it.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
All right, we're going to, because we did Wally's World, we're going to do like kind of two segments here. There's going to be a bit of a break. We've got a big mailbag this week, though, which is good. It's very good. We're back to form. So let's talk about it. Let's go down the line here. We take your questions every week in the mailbag. And looks like we got a few from Twitter as well. So we'll try to get to, through here. Let's see. So let's start with Darkus. New person to the mailbag. I've never seen a Darkus before. Was the secondary really as bad as they seem this week, or does the defensive line take at least half the blame?
Alex, you want to take this one?
Sure. I mean, I think Ryan might have touched on it earlier that since the defensive line was doing so poorly, I mean, that doesn't really open up many opportunities for the secondary. I would say it's a complete team effort. The secondary looked awful. Defensive line looked awful other than Kerry Hyder. Probably the only other player other than Kerry Hyder that kind of shined a little bit was DeAndre Levy. And I can't even imagine if we had another tragedy like last year where we did not have DeAndre Levy for the whole year, just for that game.
Don't,
like they might,
don't even
the Colts
say
might
it.
Have, what?
Don't even bring
I'm,
something.
Okay,
like that
I don't want to jinx defense. Anything, but all I'm saying is like the Colts literally could have put up 40 plus points if DeAndre Levy wasn't in that game. Like just the entire team looked, the entire defense looked terrible.
I think there's something to DeAndre Levy. Just again, like he didn't really play the preseason, and yeah, I think this defense started out cold, but we'll have to see what they adjust for next week. It's week one. I'm not going to overreact that badly.
Hopefully they won't look as bad against Marcus Mariota, who is definitely no Andrew Luck.
Like if you're looking like this against the Titans, then you can suddenly start sounding the alarms. But oh, great. Next question. Joseph R. Sweeney 5, is Kerry Hyder this year's George Johnson? And if so, one, will you take it? Two, if not, who will overpay for him next year? Three, do you like that?
Well, yes, I do think he could. Why the fuck not? Yes, he's the next George Johnson. And to the you like that thing, Kirk Cousins just shit the bed tonight. So I don't like that.
I love Kerry Hyder. I saw him in the mock game. He had a mock sack on Matthew Stafford because you're not bringing down the quarterback in the mock game.
Oh, he destroyed Riley Reiff.
Oh,
like,
yeah, like
all
it was like
season long.
It was like him and like A'shaun Robinson as the two tackle setup. Like during that mock game, we were all at. Like
yeah,
he was having himself a practice.
And you know, ever since I saw that mock game and I saw Kerry Hyder, I was fully in. I was like, you know what, Kerry Hyder deserves a spot on this team. He has that boneheaded play where he hits AJ McCarron too late in the Bengals game. He gets the flag, unsportsmanlike conduct, the personal foul. He gets the fine. That's going to be more than his entire
on the sideline going, hey, stupid, think.
Yeah, he gets the fine from the league. That's going to be worth more than his entire salary over the preseason if he doesn't make the team.
Oh yeah, how's that looking now? Did he get that reduced at all, or is he going to have to pay that full price now that he
actually?
Like, I don't know, but
totally
I mean,
forgot about that.
He's on the 53-man roster, so he's got to be racked
still
up.
A lot of money. Like he did
it
not.
Is,
this
is, it is.
He should
he's
not have had to pay that
he's
much.
He's not making millions a year. Like yeah, $18,000. It's not a small amount.
Well, I mean, he keeps playing like this. He's going to be making a nice chunk of change because he's on pace for what? 32 sacks?
Oh, yeah. He's going to hit that mark for sure.
Stop it. All right. Next question. Let's go to Smurf 0404.
A lot of new names.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. His avatar does not
sounds
look
like the
Smurf.
Regular season week one.
Does not look like a Smurf in his avatar at all either, I should note. I think that, I'm pretty sure that's the Ultimate Warrior or no, that's who is that? Oh, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, that's the
I'm
question.
I'm tired, I'm sorry. Question here is, do we really have a run game? Abdullah Best Run came on a broken play when he had to cut back across the entire line. We got stopped the line after 1 or 2 yards just as often as we gained good yardage. I would say to this, like, we have a run game in the sense that there hasn't been a run game in the past.
It was very nice to see both Abdullah and Theo Riddick run very well, but it was against the Colts, and I would say that you have to take it with several tablespoons of salt because that is a very, very bad rushing defense. So I guess my answer would be I don't know yet. We will definitely get a better answer as we begin to play better teams.
I mean, and that, like, Theo Riddick busted off like a 21-yard run. Like, I don't understand this at all right now.
Either. Yeah, and who knows
if still, I'm still processing everything.
I love that performance from Theo Riddick. I love Theo Riddick, but I'm not sure if we'll ever see that type of performance from him again in the running game.
And you know what Alex said? What Alex said should be everybody's answer. We don't know yet. You need a bigger sample size than just one game. Even with the good runs that the Lions did have, because I wouldn't say that Amir Abdullah's run where he reversed field on the broken play was the best rushing play. The one play by Riddick was incredible. The one where he made a defender miss in the backfield, then he made the linebackers miss, and he cut up field for a first down. It was only, what, Alex, you remember that play? It was like a
12-yard gain, I think.
Yeah, it was a 12-yard gain, something like that.
Two of the nastiest jukes I have ever seen.
That was one of the most incredible runs I had seen in a long time. And the thing that makes me wary about whether or not we actually have a run game, I agree with you, Chris, when you say we have a run game in the sense that the Lions have not had one in a while. I hate to use the collective we. Sorry, I leave that alone. But the Lions offensive line, even though it graded out well with PFF, and we talk about how much we hate PFF, I do not think the Lions offensive line had as good of a game as they said they did, because there were a lot of times where the running backs, like Riddick on that play that I just mentioned, some of the plays that Abdullah had to make, they had to make their own lanes. They had to make their own holes. The defensive line by the Colts in the second half was getting through, and the running backs had to make plays. So if you want to have a semblance of a run game, you have to have an offensive line first, obviously. Yeah. So let's not put the cart before the horse, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and again, I'm going to keep coming back to this quite a bit here. Week one, you know?
No room for overreactions on this podcast.
No, really trying not to. And I think that's kind of the nice thing. Like, if this game had ended like 21-3, I think there would have been some overreactions. Instead, this game ended like, well, not 21-3, but let's say like it replicated over the next quarter. So instead, it ends like 42-6. People are then freaking out. It's like, oh my god, this defense looks so good. And instead, kind of the one blessing about the Colts making this a game late is that it's like it forces everyone to just kind of hold the horses on every hot take they have about whether this team is good or not. You know, and just kind of that, which is good because week one, everyone overreacts. You know.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying I totally agree.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised. I know prior to I forget who, I think it was Jeremy, maybe it was the open thread, but he posed the question, how do you feel now after that Lions win? And most of the votes were either a lot better about the team or slightly better. And I was kind of surprised because it seemed like a lot of people in the comment section thought that we would blow the Colts out, and we made it a close game, and now they thought more highly of the team. I thought that was kind of
interesting. Well, I think in the past, you would the expectation is you're going to screw up those close games. You know, same old Lions, that shit. So,
right.
All right, next question, and then we're going to take a quick break and come back on this. So next question here. Was the defense's, this is from Adrain, was the defense's problems talent-based or schematic-based / miscommunications?
I think that I would wager that it was maybe a combination of both, more so schematic and communication-based. I think the Lions do have some talent on defense. I think that, like we had mentioned, you know, Chris, you touched on it. Jeremy touched on it. I think even Alex talked about it. Ziggy Ansah didn't have the best game. He wasn't really a big force. I think the Lions do have talent on defense. I think that some of their talent deficient positions are in the secondary, and there isn't a whole lot of depth at linebacker. So I think that some of those things came to show, but then also I think that there were a lot of plays on which the Colts gained a lot of yards because of miscommunications and not understanding who should be covering which receiver when you have receivers crossing across the field and, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, I also think they had walked into it. What?
I walked right into the things of that nature. I knew it was going to happen too.
I think part of it too was they had an Andrew Luck based problem. And again, we talk about this. He's still a really good quarterback, and he can do that to you.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of both. I mean, I've been notably like a pretty big Terrell. Well, I don't want to say hater, but I've never really thought Terrell Austin.
I'm with you. Like I know where you're going with this. Like a lot of people were clamoring for Caldwell to be fired and install Terrell Austin as the interim coach or the permanent head coach. Yeah. And I just like, no, this
that
guy isn't as good as
you think. Never worked. But I think it's a lot of both though, because no matter what Austin does, he can't just force this 4-man rush to get to Andrew Luck. Like you really have to just do your job. And like those guys did not get to Andrew Luck at all. And when they did, he was able to escape. And then back to the original question too. There was a lot of miscommunication. It looked like, particularly on that touchdown, I think it was, or maybe it was just a big play when Tahir Whitehead, seemingly picked the wrong receiver, and that led to the wide open touchdown, I think it was. I think it's a lot of both, and there's definitely, I would say, a lot to worry about right now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here and come back with part two of the mailbag, but we need to take a quick break here because we're pretty late in it, and we'll be right back. All right, second half of the mailbag. We're getting to it. Paul Yamaluk, Cooter Ball. Can it beat Zim's exotic Smash Mouth? Silence.
I don't know. Wait, Mike Zimmer's Smash Mouth defense?
Zimmer's defense,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, his defense.
Oh, okay. All right. Can it?
No, we're talking about the band for a second.
Yeah, can Cooter's offense beat Mike Zimmer's defense when the Lions play the Vikings, what, twice in the span of 3 weeks?
I think it can. I think it can also not. I don't know. Maybe.
I think we'll put some points up, but I'm like more focused on watching Sean Hill versus our defense. I think it might come down to that.
Okay, sorry, real quick. I was pausing there for a second because I saw the Blaine Gabbert wheels finally. Also looked like his head almost got taken off.
Oh, yeah, man. He's bad.
He keeps on running the football.
Why?
He's going to die. Kaepernick's going to play today.
Kaepernick had cornrows today, by the way.
he went from a fro to cornrows? Are you kidding me?
And he knelt again. I loved it.
Rodney Harrison just... Okay, sorry. God. All right. Sorry. Okay. All right. Critical Perspective asks a magical genie question. You find a magical genie. It is a weird genie because you only get one wish, not three. Actually, I'm pretty sure that's how some genies work. And the only thing you're allowed to wish for is the ability to upgrade one single position player. You are guaranteed to get a player who produces exactly league average performance every play, every game. Which player do you upgrade?
Okay, I want to answer this question, but first of all, genies can grant however many wishes you want. Just like, technically, you can kill werewolves however you want. They're fictional characters.
I don't think Jin are like limited on their wishes. Most of them, it's only one wish before they like you're like.
You've clearly never had a genie in a bottle before, dude.
All right, I've listened to plenty of Christina Aguilera in my day, but the thing is that fictional characters, you can have them be, you can have their powers be whatever you want, you can have their weaknesses be whatever they want. Well, they're fictional; they're not real.
Answer the question.
Okay, whatever. That was my English teacher hot take of the day. But anyways, so if there was one position I could upgrade and get league average play from.
By the way, that's a great question.
It is a great question. I love it. Any question that starts...
At least a league average play, if not better.
Any question that begins with a genie and I get a wish...
You said exactly... you said you are guaranteed to get a player who produces at exactly league average.
But guaranteed. Okay, whatever.
I don't know, whatever.
I would want that player to play left guard.
Boom, that was my answer too.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm sorry, Lakin Tomlinson, but... When we draft, when the Lions drafted you in the first round, it was thought of to be such a great draft pick only because the Lions were able to get Manny Ramirez and move around in the draft.
And get a fifth round pick too.
Yes. Things have become problematic since then because we have found out, the fans have found out, I don't know if the Lions have found this out yet, that Lakin Tomlinson might not be any good. He might not be any good. He might have been a two-round reach. He probably shouldn't have been taken until the third or fourth round.
He was probably the one player yesterday that was visibly bad on more than two occasions that I remember. Like, he got knocked back pretty bad on a couple plays, too.
I would probably upgrade... I want to upgrade someone in the secondary. Actually, no, I'm torn between, like, I would want to upgrade the free safety from...
Free? I think you mean strong.
Strong. Glover Quinn's at free, that's right. No, I would upgrade either the strong safety or probably the strong side linebacker. Probably one of those two positions. Like,
That's a good one, too, I would say.
It's like, I don't know, would you say Kyle Van Noy? Like, what kind of a day did Kyle Van Noy have?
He actually did very well. I hate to cite PFF, but he was one of the higher graded players. But he did have a really good play in coverage, if I remember correctly.
Okay,
I'll put it in directly as either, like, another...
Oh, yeah, but we don't know if he's going to... We don't know if he's going to be consistent, though, so I wouldn't argue with that answer either.
No, but I was leaning strong safety anyway. It was between those two, so I think with that, I will just take a better strong safety. Because
as good as Tavon Wilson looked in the preseason, he had at least one bad play in coverage that I remember. But that's not really his fault either, because he's more of a run stopper anyway, and they kind of abandoned that when we were beating him by a couple scores, so...
Well, there's that we again, but
Well, whatever. We're a fan podcast. I don't care.
All right. Next question. 5 minutes. This is from CLF, and it's more of a asking if anyone else has shared his experience here. 5 minutes left. I was yelling at the screen, run the ball, similar to Stafford yelling at Jones to get out of bounds. You?
Ryan?
I was screaming expletives and other things underneath my breath as I was trying to help Jeremy run the site. I was very upset because Jeremy's recap was turning from excitement and the prospects of maybe a good season to holy shit, the Lions are letting this one slip away in front of our eyes. And
yeah, around on Sunday really hurt the site. I apologize. We'll do better.
Yeah. You're also not a fan, so I don't think you would be screaming.
Yeah,
in
no, anger. I would absolutely have a very impartial
But no, like I don't really tend to yell at my TV with the Lions though. Like I've just become so numb to it. Like I definitely get excited when they win, but when they lose like that, I just kind of shrug my shoulders, I guess.
I mean, I don't know if I was really demanding them to run the ball itself. Like, I don't know, man. Like, when Stafford's that good as far as, like, receiving, I'm not going to worry too much whether they're running or passing, you know?
I like to see them get aggressive, so I don't care if they're running the ball and try to close it out like that.
I don't care how they move the ball as long as they move it. How about
that? Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. El Fuego 51, will Cleveland go 0-16?
No.
This is a great question for us, the team who has actually gone 0-16, by the way.
And from watching that 0-16 team, you have to be not only very bad, but you also have to have the most incredibly bad luck in order to go 0-16.
That 2008 season, like, there were games where the Lions were in it. And
a lot of them, actually.
A lot of them. And just every time they rolled the dice on those close situations, they just came up just with snake eyes.
You have to have your entire team just not believe in anything halfway through the season.
It was the most snake-bitten season of all time. Like, that's what it was. That said, though, Robert Griffin going on IR is...
That might make their team better.
It might. Well, remind me again who their backup quarterback is. I don't know if he's better, but
Josh McCown, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm excited to see that updated jersey with
more names,
20 something names on the back of it.
Like the Eagles tore them the hell apart. There's no two ways about it. But I think the Eagles are probably going to be good this year. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's just really hard to tell with the Browns. I have to look at their schedule too. Who does the AFC? They're in the AFC North. They pull the who do they pull for out of division?
The NFC. I don't know if it's the NFC East.
AFC East and NFC East.
There are some questionable teams in the NFC East. The Redskins did not look good on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, but it's the AFC East I'm a little more worried about. Bills didn't look that great.
At least 1-3 against.
Okay, but this is my point that stands true, though. There is a reason why no team had ever gone 0-16 before, because you have to have a very piss-poor collection of players, and you have to have incredibly bad luck. And you have to have the perfect storm.
If they did go 0-16, though, they would be demonstrably worse than the 2018 because they were also 0-4 in the preseason.
Whatever.
I'm just saying. 2008 Lions are preseason champions.
They're not going to go 0-16. They're going to be very bad. I would say the 49ers are even a worse team than them, and they might win tonight on Monday Night Football.
I'm just looking at their schedule, and like, yeah, it just there's a team on there that they will win in a really stupid way against. Probably Washington, maybe the Titans, but they're not. I don't think they're going to be winless.
No. A fun fact about
fun.
Oh man, I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
You can't do me like that.
You have to, though.
Why do I want to do this?
Come on, man.
Did you know that after the Lions started 6-2 in 2007, that they proceeded to lose 25 of the next 26 games they played?
Yep.
That's good, right?
All right, so next question from Enor. Just came across this nugget of a turd on NFL.com, and I'm wondering if you could discuss this particular line. So this is about, and I don't like this question that much after I've read it. This writer, Kevin Patra, who's an around the NFL writer, he's writing about the Colts defense, and the line was in here, quote, Matthew Stafford was sublime for the Lions, swiftly conducting Cooter's scheme. But Sunday's game tells us more about Indianapolis than it does about Detroit, even if Lions fans don't want to hear it. I don't think he's wrong. I still think there's a ton of questions here about the Lions, just because it was such a, you know, a night and day game when it came to the two halves. I think far as like a learning experience, we learned more about the Colts defense, but I wouldn't know the first thing about the Colts defense. So
it's awful.
Let me ask a question to both you and Alex based on that question. Can we really make anything out of any team after week one?
No. We can't. We do this every year, and we keep saying we're not going to do it after week one. And look, it's week one, and we're doing it, man. We're doing it. We always do this to ourselves, man.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the answer to that question, if I guess that's not even really much of a question, but the answer is in that quote itself. I don't want to hear about it.
I mean, I just don't care. Like, I'm not looking for the writer. I'm not actively looking for the writer who is slighting Detroit by deciding not to talk about Detroit. That's fine by me. Like, I'm not going to be the man demanding recognition for a week one win. Next question from Elephant Trees. And this is actually maybe talking about what you're talking about there, Alex, where about, you know, you being numb a little bit. We have been through so many ups and downs as Lions fans. What suggestions could you give to each of us to essentially reset our fanhood thinking? And he explains, like, you know, we're so accustomed to losing and in bad ways. We give up, you know, we feel, well, here comes another L when, you know, the Lions gave up the lead to the Colts. Like, how do they reset their thinking?
How about win two, have a winning season two seasons in a row? Because every time we, like, randomly have, or, like, we've had two seasons now where we go 10-6, and the very next season we're back to being, I don't want to say it, the SOL.
Well, I think this is, I'd like to come up with a solution that doesn't revolve around on the field performances. Like just how can you reset the thinking, just kind of like, just to, I think his ideal world is like if Lions fans are more like Cubs fans, where it's like we're going to bemoan the losses, but still feel very thrilled for the wins. We're not just going to be feeling like impending doom is coming in every close situation. Am I making sense?
I think you're making sense. I think you are.
I think to reset thinking, it's just, yeah, again, a lot of it's just getting rid of the same old Lions stuff. Like, I was talking about this with some Bills friends of mine. It's like looking between the Lions, the Browns, and the Bills. Each fan base of those three teams, like, obviously it's going to be a mix of every fan base out there. Every fan base is going to have its negatives in them, and every fan base is going to have the people who are just slappies and just kind of, you know, a loss won't faze them. But when I think of Bills fans, I think of, like, putting people through tables and being incredibly drunk.
Out of nowhere.
When I think of Browns fans, I think of their crazy, insane badge of pride that comes with being awful, where it's like, we are suffering through the bad times. We are chosen. We are the true believers. We will be rewarded. And then when it comes to the Lions, I just, yeah, I don't know, just anger, rage. And a lot of that's just kind of reprogramming that, to just not constantly be angry about the Lions or defeat about the Lions. I think it's just a matter of just having fun at the games, man. Just, I don't know, like, granted, you guys, this is the joke about not calling me a fan. It's just, I just don't take losses that hard. It's just kind of like, okay. But it's also, I think someone, Alex, you pointed this out. You basically said, you know, win or lose, after that kick went through, I think it was, you were saying win or lose, this team is the most exciting team in football.
There's, like, I mean, they're the most entertaining team for sure. Like, whether they hold on, whether they blow it, I mean,
you never know what you're going to get every week.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think you just have to revel in that fact a little bit, even if you're going to lose. Like, and yeah, like, the NFL's hard because its fans just are so harsh on each other about losing. But, you know, you just got to have to, I don't know. I have no real solutions other than saying that we've got to all turn to Texas Tech fans and, like, throw tortillas on the field or something.
Or be Red Wings fans and throw octopi on the ice.
I'm less enthused about that because those are, like, you know, creatures. But yeah, do you have any suggestions, Ryan?
I don't. I enjoy the hot take that the Lions are like a box of chocolates. You know, you don't know what you're going to get every Sunday.
Actually, I did have a suggestion, just to hand out kratom to everyone, but they're banning kratom, so can't do that anymore. All right, TJW Go Blue. So was that a pretty good glimpse of the Lions offense, the Cooter yak attack?
I think, you know what? If there's one thing that I can be more than 50% on, after week one, yes, you're going to get a lot of yak attack. Because why? Because that's the personnel that the Lions have.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Ryan pretty much hit the nail on the head there. You got two running backs that are great with yards after the catch. And your only deep threat is pretty much Marvin Jones, and he can also run screens. So, yes.
Myth 2RY asked, do you believe in the first game anomaly effect? I think we've been answering this throughout the entire night, just talking about not overreacting to game one.
I think the people in the mailbag are trying to trap us. This is a trap mailbag.
It's a trap!
Why do you say that?
Because everybody's asking questions. Do you think we have a running game? Do you think this is what the offense is going to be like? Do you think the defense is going to be this bad all year? It's like, no, I'm not going to say yes or no to any of these questions. It's one game. So this question right here, do we believe in the one game anomaly? We've talked about it.
Yep.
We've sidestepped these questions. I mean, we've curved all these.
Well, you're not going to curve this one. Hostage 42, which might be Stockholm hostage here. Marvin Jones Jr. and Eric Ebron. Like how you're throwing in the junior. Are they dumb? Don't know the rules? Don't know strategy? Or was it just a brain fart? Twice. How after playing in the NFL for years do they not know how to get out of bounds and the clock stops? Is two more yards worth five more seconds? I mean, it all worked out, but gosh. I mean, well, I'm glad you didn't use God there. God forbid we, get a little blasphemy in here. I mean, what if it was more crucial, like Terrence Williams of Dallas, right next to the sideline, 10 seconds to go, no timeouts, he falls down in bounds. What makes the Lions worse is, if I'm correct, it was two times in a row. After Stafford yelled at Ebron, Marvin Jones Jr., once again with the junior, did the same exact thing, same side of the field. I don't know. If a simple thing like getting out of bounds to stop the clock can't be done, Lord help us if we need five to get a first down, and one of them runs a two-yard route, LOL. Anyway, all's well that ends well, LOL, ... I guess.
Wow. Is there a question in there, or was that just a comment? Because this is a thing, and I want to open this up to you guys. Which play is worse? The Eric Ebron play, the Marvin Jones play, or what Terrence Williams did?
Terrence Williams, hands down.
I don't think it's even a debate, because this is why. If you want to talk about how quote unquote boneheaded those plays were, yes, in a vacuum, Eric Ebron should not be fighting for yards when time is of more value. Marvin Jones should have gone out of bounds to preserve a timeout. However, the Lions had timeouts. That was the situation. So those guys probably were thinking, I mean, I can just play football. We can make our own timeouts. We have artificial ones. We can use them whenever we want them because our coach saved all of them. Surprise. Oh, fuck. Surprise. I'm Jeremy, motherfucker.
I think I am more shocked at the play of
John C.
Third and four, looks into the nickel of San Francisco in the secondary. Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Here comes the blue coat.
Oh, they got him.
Here comes
coming
the blue
from the left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Oh, that was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
I tell you what, that was a great call on your part. That was a great call.